From the National Humanities Center at Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings. Is there a profession of authorship in the United States? Are there professional codes and standards for writers, publishers, critics, and editors? Seeking answers to those and related questions, the National Humanities Center recently convened a discussion of the profession of authorship in America. The speakers are James West, Lee Smith, Edmund Fuller, and Matthew Hodson. James West teaches English at Virginia Polytechnic Institute. He's a scholar in residence at the National Humanities Center. Lee Smith is on the faculty at North Carolina State University. Her novels include Black Mountain Breakdown. Her most recent collection of short stories is Cakewalk. Edmund Fuller is chief book critic for the Wall Street Journal. He's the author of many textbooks and works of fiction and nonfiction. Matthew Hodson is director of the University of North Carolina Press. Joining in the conversation is Kent Mulliken, my colleague at the National Humanities Center.
I was telling Lee a little bit earlier that one of the things I've investigated this year is whether indeed there is a profession of authorship in America in the sense that we use that word, profession. In America, since about 1840, middle-class culture has increasingly organized itself along professional lines, but somehow the author has been left out of that organization. It may be, of course, that authorship is a calling that is intrinsically unable to become a profession, and that authors are themselves incapable of being professionals in the same way that we think of doctors and lawyers as professionals, or in an expanded sense of the term, architects or engineers. Everyone wants to be known as a professional these days, but it's very difficult for the author because he has no, there are no formal training programs, for instance, for authors. There are no certification procedures. There are no real codes of ethics. There are no professional associations that are as powerful or well organized as the AMA and the ABA. So this puts the author in an unusual position both within and without his society. He is surrounded by a culture of professionalism of which he is not really a part. And I've always thought that it may contribute in some ways to his sense of alienation or non-belonging, the way he views himself, where he draws his material, his self-concept, all of those things. Lee, as an author, do you think of yourself as a professional?
I think very few of us think of ourselves as professional, because I think you have to define that as do you make a living from your writing? And almost nobody does. I mean, there's so few writers in this country who can do that. I think of myself as a teacher in terms of being a professional, and I think most writers, unfortunately, do that. I think we have to do something to make a living and write on the side.
Well, that brings up another question, Lee. You're not only an author, but you teach creative writing. Jim said that there's no formal training for authors. Could you talk about that a little bit as professional preparation?
I feel like that the creative writing courses on the undergraduate level are very valuable, because there are things you can learn in a semester, two semesters, a couple of years of creative writing that can save you years on your own. I mean, points of technique. But I'm appalled by this huge number of MFA programs that have sprung up across the country, and I'm appalled by all these summer writing workshops. And I think what they're doing is turning out more people who are going to be lackluster teachers who write three or four kind of pedestrian short stories a year and don't contribute anything. I mean, they're going to be stuck in the same sort of bind.
We may not have professional training for authors. We do have it for Poet Monkay.
Yes, we do. And we have professional training for lots of would-be writers. You know, there are lots of people who want to be writers a lot more than they want to learn how to write. And these are the people that are going to these MFA programs. And I find it kind of horrifying.
What does the average writer make? You say writers don't support themselves.
Right. I think, first of all, you would have to take into consideration what you thought you could sell. You wouldn't be able to write probably what you wanted to write. You would have to do a lot of nonfiction. You would have to be writing consciously for a market. The ones who do support themselves from their work are writing consciously for a specific market, usually generic fiction.
The writers who are successful, who make a lot of money at writing, and who write what they want to write, is that just coincidence, just the convergence of
I think it's
luck?
It's very few. I mean, occasionally something happens, like The World According to Garp, you know, and John Irving can quit teaching English, or Ragtime, for instance, when it was published, that was a book that got very good reviews and also, you know, made a lot of money. Those things are almost never, ever happen. And for the average writer, like, I worked on a novel for 4 years and got $10,000 for it, so you divide that by four, you know, you can't support yourself on that.
Jim mentioned the professional code of ethics shared by doctors and lawyers. Is there any kind of are there professional links among writers? Do they share a set of assumptions about what it means to be a writer? Or do you just sort of approach one another and say, well, here's another crazy person trying to do what I'm doing?
I think there's a big sort of delineation, and often it's very difficult to deal with in certain situations, between people who are trying to write serious fiction and people who are just trying to sell. And a lot of times these people will really clash, like you'll get them several in a writer's group, and you'll get somebody writing a very serious novel, and you'll get somebody else writing, trying to write a Harlequin romance. And these people, you know, it's completely as different as night and day what they are trying to do. I think among the more serious writers, the people who have published frequently with the small presses and in the literary magazines, there is kind of a network. They sort of know each other's work, and they keep up with it, and they invite each other back and forth for readings, and they always seem to be associated with colleges of one kind or another. So there is definitely a support system.
Now, I would like to speak to this basic question of a profession of letters. Now, before we got started formally, Matt raised the complicated semantic question about the word profession. And I didn't have time to check, but I would bet that in the OED that there are probably several columns on that word. Now, I think it is very easy to make this too complicated. Let me speak for myself and say that in the loose, flexible usage of the time, I most definitely consider myself a professional writer, as compared to what we all recognize as the amateur, the dilettante, the writer manqué. Letters, in a very broadly inclusive sense, not belles lettres, but letters, is a profession. And I've worked in that profession all my life as an editor, as a writer, as a writer of both fiction and nonfiction, a variety of roles, as a teacher, and all these things. And I don't think the criterion is whether you can earn your complete living from writing novels or short stories or whatsoever. I think the question is a more practical one. For example, are you steadily producing as a writer? Are you published as a writer, and steadily and consistently published as a writer? And in the other aspect of the thing, are you working steadily? For instance, Bob Giroux is certainly a man of letters. He is a professional. He is editor rather than writer, but I think it is more to the point to speak of a profession of letters, and I think that the person who works dedicatedly in it and who practices more than one branch of it, and who, if not perhaps in any one branch of it earning all his or her living, is nonetheless steadily earning income as a productive person in this field of letters, I think such a person is a professional. And I think the term is useful to cut out the matter of amateurism. And I'm not going to be snobbish about this in the literary sense. For example, writers for whom we may not have any particular literary esteem are writers of bestsellers. They are professionals. They are they spend their lives writing. They write with skill. They earn substantial increment from writing, and they are steadily published. And they are, in that sense, unquestionably professionals. Within the loose usage that prevails now of the word.
Well, they may look at themselves as professionals, but from beyond their own personal viewpoints. There, a lot of them aren't viewed as professionals, are they?
By whom?
I mean, that's
a question of by whom. I
mean,
mm-hmm. I reject the idea that there has to be a validating society somewhere to say who is or who is not a professional. As far as our trade goes, it's a very it has to be a more flexible thing than it is, obviously, for a physician or for a lawyer.
Yes, I think all that's very true. I think the purpose of looking at the author's lot and thinking of it in terms of professionalism is more an academic question. It's something to stimulate our thinking about authors and their position within a society. I don't think we should be anxious to define them as professionals, and I certainly don't think they should be too anxious to try to make themselves into a profession, if indeed that were possible. Some of the experiments recently in New York with the Authors League meetings up there, the Writers' Congress that was sponsored by the nation, the biggest difficulty that the people had at the conference was defining who was a writer, that is, who can join. What do you have to publish to be called a writer? Where did it have to be published? How long ago? In short, at what point can you turn to a person whom you have just met and introduce yourself as a writer, at least in this country?
Wayne, we've been talking about writers as professionals, and we've been assuming that we mean people who write novels, poems, and plays, but we're sitting in the middle of a center where there are 45 scholars, all of whom are writing books. And I'd like to ask Matt Hodgson, to what extent do scholars who publish with university presses, such as the one you direct at the University of North Carolina, to what extent do these people see themselves as professional writers?
I don't think that they see themselves as writers. They see themselves as scholars and presenting, original research. They hope in an attractive way, but I recall a conversation with the late Samuel Eliot Morison, and he was talking about the practice of professing history and writing it. And he went back to the days of Parkman, Bancroft, and so forth, where a historian, say, also viewed himself as a writer and attempted to inject a literary flavor or content or quality into historical scholarship. I don't think that this is done much today. We have some happy exceptions. But much of the prose written by scholars is fairly dull.
Do you think that academic writers would be better off if they did think of themselves more as professional writers, and if they did have some sort of market, however limited, in mind?
Well, I think that they certainly the manuscripts would be livelier. Unfortunately, most PhDs do not have a good command of the English language.
It's absolutely leaden prose. I quite agree. I've always thought, though, that the tensions between commercialism on the one hand and art on the other are often very good for creative writing. Some of those writers you speak of, Lee, who get together at the conferences and weep and moan and scratch each other's backs and who publish in journals of very limited circulation, these people are in effect subsidized by universities to be teachers, and they probably are teachers, not really writers. And I know this is a sweeping generalization, but oftentimes one of the ways to mask one's ineptitude or the boring nature of one's writing is simply to say that I'm a serious writer, I'm aiming for a high audience.
Right.
I think those tensions between art and commercialism have produced some of our greatest writers, right on down from William Shakespeare, for heaven's sakes. And so I don't see that totally as a bad thing. Maybe those two groups of writers should listen to each other a little bit more.
From the National Humanities Center at Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings. You're listening to the first part in a series of discussions about the profession of authorship in America. The speakers are James West, Edmund Fuller, Matthew Hodgson, and Lee Smith. James West is a scholar at the National Humanities Center and a professor of English at Virginia Polytechnic Institute. Edmund Fuller is chief book critic for the Wall Street Journal. Matthew Hodgson is director of the University of North Carolina Press. Lee Smith teaches English at North Carolina State University. Her novels include Black Mountain Breakdown, and a collection of her short stories, entitled Cakewalk, has just been published.
One of the things that interests me, too, is how we all get into our various branches of writing or publishing. I suppose everyone around this table, in one sense or another, is a writer or a publisher or both. There are many encouragements in our society for young people, young men and young women, to go into all sorts of different professions, but often people seem to get into writing and publishing through some roundabout way. I've spent this year reading a great deal of literary biography, and I don't want to get into psychobiography or Freudian things, but in almost every case, a young person who declares himself or herself to be a writer must fight against a lot of opposition within the family, and especially from the father. There is opposition of all sorts. I'm reading a very fine biography of Edith Wharton right now, and she was a woman in her 40s before she could finally break loose from the subconscious restraints on her and think of herself as a writer. In some ways, she never did break loose from those things. And of course, if you look at a lot of male writers, they always have difficulty, almost always, with their fathers. Of course, again, this creates an interesting sort of tension in the writer. It may, in the long run, be good for him. But the question I'm always amused to ask, what would you think if your daughter brought a young man home and said, "Daddy, this is the man I want to marry," and you asked the young man, "And what are you going to be, sir?" And if he said, "A writer," what would you think?
Edmund? All right, but apropos this, so far, I don't think any of us has mentioned a very important word for one aspect of writing, and that is the word artist. And the problem that you raise and the matter of validation applies to the painter, it applies to the sculptor, it applies to the musician, whether a performing musician or a composing musician, and it is one of those instances in which the validation is the product. And it is not unnatural in a middle-class society for parents to worry whether about prospective in-laws or about their own children. Can Johnny make a living? Can Susie or Susie's husband make a living from this kind of thing? But it would be very easy to narrow this concept of the professional too much, and I would say the validation is the product.
Yes, it may be a natural winnowing process that we have to bring the best or at least the toughest writers to the top, but one certainly doesn't have to face that sort of winnowing process in other professions, though there are other winnowing processes, other ways of separating them out. I suppose they're just different. How does one become a publisher, Matt?
Well, usually by accident. you have some interest in books, obviously, in literature, but perhaps decide that you don't want to write it or can't write it very well.
Walter Hines Page once asked Charles Scribner Pear, the older Charles Scribner, I believe it was Junior, asked him if publishing were a profession, and old Mr. Scribner thought. He said, "No, it's not a profession." And then Page said, "Is it a business?" And Mr. Scribner said, "No, it's not a business either." And he thought a little longer, and he said, "Publishing is a career." And that may also go for writing, as long as we're kicking around the semantic question.
Well, if you want to do that, I can go you one better, because Houghton Mifflin, years ago, prior to my joining that firm, published the memoirs of Sir Stanley Unwin, who was one of the founders of Allen and Unwin, a very distinguished English firm. And Sir Stanley was asked about book publishing, whether it was a trade or profession. And he pondered a while, and he said it's neither. He said it's an occupation for gentlemen. which I thought was a very neat way of getting out of it. I think in no sense is book publishing a profession. One can make one's living from it. But I would not in any way think of it as a profession. It is not self-regulating within the group. Oh, in broad ways it is. You're perhaps governed by the laws of economics. Mm. But I don't consider myself a professional.
Let me put a question to the four of you, to Jim West and Lee Smith, Matt Hodson, and Edmund Fuller, from the standpoint of scholar, academic, writer, publisher, and book critic. What is the responsibility that each of you has? Let me begin with you, Jim. What's the responsibility of the academic in the profession of authorship, regardless of how you want to define that?
To write intelligently and informatively and, if possible, entertainingly.
Sir Philip Sidney. Lee?
May we publish your next book.
Lee, what about you? Do you ponder things like that?
No.
They don't worry you?
No.
You simply do it. You just
write
it.
Yeah, I just write what I have to write. I don't really think of it in terms of responsibility. I mean, or in terms of, I write what I need to write as well as I can possibly write it.
Do you want to teach through your writings?
No, not at all. Anything like that.
How would you feel if somebody came to you and said, that last book of yours, or Black Mountain Breakdown, for instance, I really learned a lot in that book, and it changed my life. It made an impact on me. It had a message and a meaning. Would that bother you? Would that make
you
happy?
Well, people have said that to me, in fact, about that particular book. And no, it doesn't bother me. I mean, you write what you want to write as well as you can possibly write it, and then you have to assume that people will take it and use it in the way that they need to use it too. I mean, just the way that when I read fiction written by other people or poetry written by other people or anything like that, I often have a slightly varying interpretation according to my own needs.
Suppose somebody came to you and said, I read that book and I want you to know that I'm mad at you because it did something to my daughter, my son. You're responsible for that.
I wouldn't be responsible for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Disavow all responsibility. I feel like if you... that my only responsibility is to write as well as I possibly can and to see things as clearly as I possibly can, which, again, it's always biased, you know.
Mm-hmm. Let me put that question to Matt Hodgson.
Publishers are nothing more or less than skilled, one hopes, literate technicians, and you translate a manuscript into a finished, readable book, one hopes. any other pretension, I think, probably is just that. Now, obviously, a lot of my colleagues disagree with me violently, but, and there are, you do have the responsibility sometimes or the opportunity of recognizing talent when you see it, even genius. But I see nothing. I think our main function is simply that, to translate a sometimes roughly written manuscript into a smoother one and to publish it as effectively as possible.
Edmund?
Well, I have a vision inwardly of a number of possible theoretical or idealized responsibilities that writers or publishers or critics or so on might have, and I do not think any one of them is one that can be imposed. I think they're subtle. I think they make for very interesting extended discussion among people working in the field. But essentially, I agree with Lee Smith, the writer, as with any other artist, does what he or she is impelled to do, and I think in all this field of letters, there's no touchstone except the individual's personal sense of integrity about what he or she is doing. And that would differ with various people. The matter, on this matter of teaching or having a goal or a purpose, you have writers as diverse as Alan Payton, who certainly had a purpose in that magnificently lyrical book, Cry of the Beloved Country. Mm-hmm. You have a writer such as Upton Sinclair, who had a didactic purpose, but on the other hand, a book written with no conscious didactic intention whatsoever may teach somebody, as we were saying a moment ago, mm-hmm. just as much as the one with direct didactic purpose. So responsibility, it seems to me, in this field is responsibility, as in so many other things of life, to one's own fundamental sense of integrity in whatever it is that you're doing.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. I think when I mentioned what I was talking about really was the sense that if, for a writer, if you start with a theme, if you start with a point that you want to get across to people, generally speaking, the work is terrible. And generally speaking, the characters are just little cardboard characters mouthing points of view rather than being characters that can walk around and so on. Of course, there are writers who operate from the thematic stance, and that's clearly why they're writing what they're writing, but they have to be very, very good.
That's right.
In order to do it.
That's right.
Because the dangers involved are just enormous.
When writers talk among themselves about themes or issues, is it embarrassing to say, I have this idea and I've got something that I think needs to be said, and how would you say it? That is, if you were to talk with another writer, or is that so intensely personal, as Edmund says, the responsibility of the writer to his own or her own sense of integrity? You simply cannot discuss those things?
I think, sure, I mean, anything is valid. If you want to talk to somebody else who's writing about your work, anything is valid to talk about. That's probably the hardest thing to talk about, because you do have to realize that different people are going to get different things out of what you write, and that's very hard. I think one of the problems in dealing with amateur writers or would-be writers in these workshops is so many of them really don't want to learn how to write. They do have a burning point to get across, you know, whether it's the injustices of their life as a nurse or, you know, whatever it happens to be, and that's why they want to write.
I strongly suspect that very few writers, and they probably not very good ones, would be sitting down and talking among themselves in the terms of your hypothetical question. And it is just simply a part of the general reluctance of most writers to talk very much about work in progress.
I don't do it. Yeah, very few people that I know really do it.
I've never heard a writer, at least, you know, a well-known established writer, talk about a work in progress in any definite way. It'd be the most vague sort of thing. I'm interested in the 19th century or westward expansion or something of that sort.
Very good, yeah.
And nothing further. Even a writer as prolific as Georges Simenon would not discuss what he was doing. Perhaps he didn't know. He'd usually go out and walk around for a couple of weeks and write the novel mentally and then go type it out furiously.
That's a very good phrase. Perhaps he didn't know.
Yes.
You've been listening to Soundings, conversations originating at the National Humanities Center at Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. This is Wayne Pond. The center is interested in your comments. Write to us at the National Humanities Center, Post Office Box 12256, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina 27709. Soundings is made possible, in part, by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities and is distributed by the Public Affairs Broadcast Group, Los Angeles, California. Listen to Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center inviting you to join me this week for the first part of the Center's series on the profession of authorship in America. Are there discernible professional codes and standards for writers, editors, publishers, and critics in American letters? a novelist, an English professor, the chief book critic for the Wall Street Journal, and the director of the University of North Carolina Press have some answers and insights. Listen this week for Soundings.